Good morning, everyone. I call this meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. It is Tuesday, February 6th, 2024. The time is 8:03 a.m. Members currently present are Representative McKay, Representative Mears, Representative McCabe, Representative Baker, and myself, Representative McCormick. I did get word that Representative Ruffridge and Representative Hinshute should be joining us a little bit later this morning as well. Today, our recording secretary is Sophia Tenney and Doug Bridges, a saxophonist who did a wonderful job last night at that reception that we were at, is our LIL moderator assisting with teleconference support. I want to thank you both for being here this morning. My staff is Stephanie Andrew. She's our committee aide. So if you have any questions or notes, please come here to the corner of the table, get her attention, and she can pass that for us. Originally we had two items on the agenda today. I believe we had, of course, the Department of Public Safety, who we'll hear from, but we also had Finance Subcommittee scheduled for today, but that has since been canceled. So we will just be having the Public Safety presentation today. So the presentation on Public Safety will be provided by James Cockrell, Commissioner Cockrell, and a number of other individuals as well. So, Commissioner, without further ado, if you would please come forward, state your name for the record, and begin your presentation.
Good morning. Through the chair, I'm James Cockrell, Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. And with me, I've got Lisa Parrington. I've also got several lifelines online. If there's a question I can't answer to provide additional support. Also, and if it's all right with you, I'd like to introduce my staff here. I've got Pam Holleran, our DAS, and also got Lloyd Nakano. He's our the state of Alaska's fire marshal. I do want to thank you for the ability to meet today and talk about the department. As you know, I'm pretty passionate about the department, the mission that we do accomplish. I do have a PowerPoint. My preference is if you have questions, please ask. I'd rather have a conversation versus going through a PowerPoint. I'm not a big fan of PowerPoints. But I will compliment my staff for putting this together. So essentially, the Department of Public Safety has a very easy mission when it comes to what our mission is, and that's to provide to ensure public safety, that includes life and safety, and also to protect property. It also includes to enforce fish and game laws, or to ensure that we have our wildlife resources in Alaska. That most people, one of the reasons most people come to Alaska is for our wildlife resources. One of the things that I set up every year is to provide what I think is our key objectives to the department. And it changes a little bit per year, but essentially one of our primary, and this is something I share with all Department of Public Safety employees, that way they know exactly where we're going as a department. One of our important things, which we'll probably discuss at length, is our recruitment, retention, and then also our wellness program. Because we see part of our wellness program is our retention of specifically troopers, but also our support staff. Certainly important to this department, because we are a rural law enforcement agency, is to provide professional law enforcement services throughout the state. Our fisheries and wildlife protection, again, I touched on that as part of our mission. I'll go into a little bit more depth when we talk about the Alaska Wildlife Troopers and the direction the Alaska Wildlife Troopers is going in the state. Certainly major crime investigations. We do have the Alaska Bureau of Investigations. We do also have a vibrant drug investigative unit, and we also focus on, as we talked about yesterday in yesterday's meeting, missing and murdered Indigenous people, and also high-level complex crimes within our major crimes investigative unit. One of the things, one of my priorities, and will continue to be one of my priorities as long as I'm commissioner, is to enhance our 911 services across the state. As we will probably go into a little bit more depth than that, but as you know, we've got many areas of the state that doesn't have 911 services, doesn't have the the vibrant 911 services that they deserve, and most of that is in western rural Alaska. And then also, one of the things that we're looking at is how we can enhance safety in our public schools. And if you've got any questions, please ask. This is kind of just an organizational chart of our department and our budget, how it's laid out. We've got Fire Life and Safety Division, which is our deputy fire marshals. They also do plan reviews for buildings. And, again, a very important part of our department. We'll probably talk about that a little bit more. Of course, we've talked multiple times about the BPSO division or program. Now we've changed it from a division within the Alaska State Troopers component or within the department under the commissioner's office. And that program continues to grow and foster even faster in providing positions than we're providing for the Alaska State Troopers. And of course, everybody sees the Alaska Department of Public Safety. The biggest factor there is the Alaska State Troopers. Everybody, I mean, when you talk about the Department of Public Safety, you think about the Alaska State Troopers. And
Vice Chair McCabe.
You probably knew I was going to stop here, Commissioner.
I didn't know that, sir.
So, you know, there's been a lot of, you and I have talked about this before, but there's been a lot of talk. There was a recent article or op-ed in ADN about the Mat-Su getting their own police force. And, you know, we've talked about that as far as if we say we became a first-class borough and had law enforcement capabilities and we hired a bunch of sheriffs or elected a sheriff and hired a bunch of law enforcement, would the troopers still patrol the borough like they do right now? That's the first question. Maybe we could explore that a little bit, and then I want to talk about BPSOs.
Okay, I was waiting for your second question. To the chair, Vice Chair McCabe, I'll try to answer your question. Essentially, it came up in a hearing yesterday. Right now, the Mat-Su Borough is certainly outpacing our ability to fill positions there. If you look at the number of troopers that we have assigned to patrol, because that's primarily what people, because we have to respond to emergencies, we cannot do it. We average about, for a minimum shift in the borough, is about 5 state troopers. That's 1 sergeant for 4 state troopers, and that is to police about 112 residents outside the cities or inside the boroughs in an area about the size of West Virginia. Realistically, we're not even providing adequate services there. We certainly saw what the borough decided to do with having people go out and buy guns and ammunition. I will say that if the borough had a police department, the Alaska State Troopers would still be there. It would be just at a different capacity. It would be more towards highway enforcement and major crime investigations. If you look at the number of sexual assaults we have with our children in the Mat-Su Borough is very high. We have a specifically unit that addresses those type of crimes against children. We have a vibrant drug investigative unit in the Mat-Su Valley, and we also have major crime investigators. I see if the boroughs were to take over law enforcement, I see the department changing more into a proactive response instead of a reactive. We're essentially completely reactive right now because of the number of vacancies we have. Even if we had all our vacancies full, we'd still be somewhat reactive. During the last budget cuts that we took, and if I'm going in a different direction, please let me know. Last budget cuts we took away everything proactive we were doing as a police department. We took away our borough highway patrol. We had 22 PCNs involved in that. They were proactive enforcement of our highways, investigating accidents, DUIs. We also took away our DV support or follow-up troopers. So we had troopers assigned just to follow up domestic violence and sexual assault cases to ensure they get the amount of attention that they deserve. And then we can effectively prosecute them and also hold the offender responsible. We got rid of our BPSO support troopers that were directly supporting our BPSOs. And I think once you saw our support troopers go away, we saw the decline in the BPSO program. So I hope I answered your question, sir.
Sure. So if you don't mind a follow-up, Mr. Chair. So, yeah, that's I mean, that's consistent with what we've talked about. You know, the Matsu did do a study years ago. I'm sure you're aware of it. And the cost to provide the level, just the level that the state troopers are doing right now, would take the mill rate for taxes up above 20 for every place in the Matsu, frankly, which is, you and I have talked about this as well. Matsu is a rural borough. I mean, yes, we have cities, Wasilla and Palmer, but you said it yourself, for 110,000 people the size of West Virginia, to me, that's rural. The question is, there's two police departments out there, Wasilla and Palmer, right? And those cities both provide support to the troopers, even if it's, I've seen them outside, I've seen Wasilla way out by Big Lake before, out by Houston, actually, supporting the troopers. So you do have some sort of an agreement with the two smaller cities that are in the borough to support you, support the troopers in certain instances, right?
To the Chair, Vice Chair McCabe, you're correct. We do have pretty good relationships with us, the Palmer Police Department and the Wasilla Police Department. In fact, I was on patrol with the troopers in the valley about a month ago, night shift, and we had a guy that was running from us, went in the woods, and we were tracking him for probably an hour and a half, and the Wasilla Police Department showed up with their drone and actually found the guy. We arrested him and got him to where he needed to go. Probably saved his life because he was going to freeze to death if we wouldn't have caught up to him. So certainly, as a department, we help the Wasilla Police Department, specifically in Palmer, if they have an officer involved shooting or critical incident they want the Alaska State Troopers to check, come into, because the Alaska State Troopers will support any law enforcement agency, whether it's on the North Slope, we've done that before in complex investigations or their officer involved shootings, or even down in Juneau, we've investigated cases here to support the Juneau Police Department. That's part of what the Alaska State Troopers does, is provide support for higher level support that some police departments can't afford. I know in the Kenai, because that's where I live, both the Kenai Police Department and the Soldat Police Department engage with the troopers around the borough and essentially provides additional support for us. If I may go a little bit, if there was, even if the borough would help us out in certain areas, I mean, you look at our leases for our buildings and stuff, we got about $1 million a year in that. Dispatch services for mostly providing borough support is about $2 million. Even if there was a way that the borough could reinvest in our department, that would certainly help us, where we're not actually asking for more police, or they could contract with the Alaska State Troopers, because we, you know, when we were going through the Girtwood thing, one of the things is if you put contract with us, which is pretty, we'd have to do some statutory changes to do that. But if you look at the lower 48, most of the sheriff's departments, they contract out. There's in the Mounties contract out. If you go to Whitehorse, at least the last time they talked to the Mounties, they provided contract services for Whitehorse. So there are other alternatives than setting up your police department, because you're right, it's expensive. You got liabilities. You got to start from scratch. It's probably going to be multi-million dollars to do that. But there's got to be other ways that we could look at it to support what we're doing as the Alaska State Troopers and continue to grow. If we had, I'd say, some financial support from the boroughs, well, that could be Fairbanks and the Kenai Peninsula, not just the Matsu Valley.
Follow up?
Follow up.
So that's a perfect segue into what I wanted to really talk about, is the VPSO program. So I know that in many villages off the road system, the VPSO program is supported in certain instances, whether it be housing or offices, by the community or by one of the Native associations, if I'm not mistaken, from last year. You can correct me if I'm wrong, for sure. What if there was something like that on the road system? What if we could put a VPSO in Talkeetna, Trapper Creek, and you know exactly why I'm talking about up there, or Chase, or somewhere up there, and have them somehow supported, whether it be housing or vehicles or whatever, by the borough? Would that be something kind of on the order of a reserve sheriff in Texas? You know, still have all the training, be a sworn officer similar to a VPSO, not taking anything away from the villages, but adding to the VPSO program to support your troopers when they get way up the Parks Highway or, you know, somewhere out in the boonies in the Mat-Su, and having a VPSO close might be an answer. I don't know. It's something that I'd really like to explore with you, frankly. So,
through the chair, I don't know if there's a question there, but I will say, again, the VPSO program is fostered for the last 3 or 4 years. We started at less than 35, and we're over 70 right now. We've got 11 at the academy. We have 142 MOUs with tribes around the states, and we've got like 50 villages that we currently have VPSOs. We've expanded the VPSOs program to allow for at least a second VPSO. That way we don't get burnouts. That was one of the major issues. I'll get to your question. We would have to change this if we went the direction you're asking. And I did go through the town hall meeting in Trapper Creek, and certainly they have issues there. And I know there's other places up the road system. Part of that is the cause effect of what's going on in Trapper Creek, Talkeetna, was the cuts we took back when we shut down the post to save $20,000. That's how much the post cost us. And the administration at the time said, yeah, close the post. We closed 12 posts around the state. And it's hard for us as a department, because we don't know one year after another what our funding is going to be. But if we have an administrative change, all departments see huge changes in either funding, leadership, and it negatively affects the department, but also affects the state, because we're, especially our department, because we are, if you look at it, there's probably not an area that we don't touch, other than maybe the North Slope Borough a little bit, but every everywhere else we touch one way or another. And to your, I'm kind of dragging your question out a little bit. I think there's potential, but I think that we still have to look at our villages first before we move them into the more urban areas. We may have to see a change in statute to allow that, because the program was designed for, we have VPSOs on a road system, say in Glen Allen, but in Glen Allen, they take care of Copper Center, Chistochina, Chitna, up the Edgerton Highway. So they're taking Kona, Gulcana. There's several villages that they're taking care of. They're roving back and forth between their offices, just kind of like the troopers do, but they're assigned villages. And again, could we transition that to something like Trapper Creek or something? I think that's what you're referring to more. Or I think the possibility is there. It's just we have to decide as you guys set policy by how you fund us, we have to decide if that's the direction we want to go with the program. I'm not opposed to it. I just think we have to look at it. We still have 60 other villages that want VPSOs that we don't have right now. But the program is substantially growing. The governor's added more positions to the program for this fiscal year or next fiscal year. They've added a pay raise for them to keep them. Actually, the nutrition rate of the program, or the people leaving the program, has really dropped over the last few years because of the support of the legislature, the governor's office, and the support the Alaska State Troopers are providing our VPSOs, because it is a marriage. Sometimes it can be rocky between the two, but realistically, we're married together, and we'll continue to do that. I know we're off our slide a little bit, but we recently restructured the VPSO program, put a director running the program instead of, a lieutenant or captain or something off staff like we've done for 40 years that has been successful and hasn't been successful. But what we wanted to do is cement the program to where the next commissioner or the next administration doesn't come in and kind of take it apart. And so one way to do that is put a director in, which we have now a director in the program, and that director is on the same level and parity as the director of the Alaska State Troopers, and the director of the Alaska Wildlife Troopers, and the other directors within my department. We see that structurally as to continue to grow the program and the safeguard program. So there is an avenue. It's just we have to decide what we're going to do, because if I know I don't really think I answered your question too well, but we can certainly have discussions on it.
Sure, I appreciate that. And maybe this is better taken offline, but you know, my big question, the overarching question, and I have not talked to the borough, but I know that there's 60 villages or more villages that want a BPSO, but if the borough were to fund them, take the funding issue away, could you train them and could you control them? Would they be part of you, so to speak, and maybe solve this law enforcement problem or shortage of officers in the Mat-Su?
Through the chair, I'd have to seek a little bit of legal advice before I answer this. I'm not opposed to looking at different avenues for providing public safety to areas that don't have it, but I'm bound to not take from Peter to pay Paul.
Sure.
And Peter right now is our village.
Right.
So, but
perfect. Thanks.
You're welcome, sir.
Representative Mears, I see you have a question, but I just want to make a very quick comment. Vice Chair McCabe, I think that's a fine idea to have that program there. I guess I worry, even if, you know, our original intention is for the Mat-Su to pay for it, I really would be very concerned that those funds inevitably might end up taken away from our communities. So fine idea, but I think there's a lot of potential for that to go south. Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. Commissioner, earlier in this conversation, we talked about the troopers having to pull back on being proactive. And one of the items you mentioned was follow up on domestic violence cases. I would assume that this results in more violence against women. Is this just in the Mat-Su Valley or is this statewide?
To the chair, Representative Mears, this is a good question. Realistically, we have domestic violence issues, serious issues around the whole state. It's not focused on the Mat-Su Valley or any other borough or any other community. It is there. And the department takes investigating domestic violence and sexual assault very seriously. Our policies are very in-depth on how we handle investigations. And the unfortunate thing, if you're a woman in Alaska, you're more apt to be killed than any other state by your intimate partner, which is usually going to be a male. It's not. And we always look at domestic violence as male against female. We can anymore, we're seeing, you know, male against male or female against female because of relationships. So we do certainly have a problem with, I would say we have crisis when it comes to domestic violence and sexual assault in the state. We talk about this every year. We continue to lead the nation per capita in that. And, you know, the state is, we got the Council on Domestic Violence that's focused on that. Certainly funds our shelters around the state. I think they've got 32 or so shelters around the state to provide safe haven for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault. And it's a societal issue that has to be tackled. It's not, everybody thinks it's a law enforcement issue. Really, it's not a law enforcement issue, because by the time law enforcement is involved, we have victims and somebody's in our criminal justice system. So it has to be, my personal opinion, it has to be taught early on in school that you have to have healthy relationships. It's not okay to go beat up your neighbor or your significant other. And that's the only way that I can see it to change in this state. You know, because again, we cannot arrest our way out of domestic violence, sexual assault, because we're not in everybody's houses. I can put troopers in almost any community, 100 troopers in the valley just to focus on domestic violence. Our quality of cases will probably go up, but we're not going to solve the issue. It's a societal issue. It's not a law enforcement issue.
Follow up, Brett Mears. Commissioner Cockrell, please continue your presentation.
All right. I'll try to see where we're at now. Keep going.
What's that? We didn't talk about that one.
Oh, well, one thing. Through the chair, if I don't mind asking, I just saw that on our org chart. One of the things that we're attempting to do is start a victim service division within our department. And I'll have to say it wasn't my idea. It was my staff that came to me and say, we need to coordinate what we're doing with our victim services. That includes CDUSA, our Violent Crimes Conservation Board, our victim navigators, our tribal liaisons, and because again, you know, the criminal justice system, they focus specifically on our criminals, right? They have constitutional rights and they have rights when they go to prison and all this other stuff. But what we're missing as a department, I believe, is the fact that we don't do a very good job of taking care of the victims and making them survivors. And I think part of that, whether it's law enforcement agency or not, I think that's part of it. So holistically, what we're trying to do is everything that's not involved in a uniform goes into our victim services division that focuses, can coordinate and focus on our victims and hopefully make them survivors at the same time as our troopers are investigating crimes. So we also have, if we want to go through our component, we have statewide support. Lisa's the director of the statewide services. I'm off one thing here, but we also have statewide, essentially it focuses on our administrative and part of the department, handguns, sex offender registry, fingerprinting for backgrounds. And there's just a lot of things behind the scenes that's not the Alaska State Troopers that are keeping our state safe. And then also the Alaska Police Standard Council. And we kind of talked about it. We, again, as a department, we have a statewide responsibility and a statewide impact. There's not really a place that we really aren't involved in when it comes to law enforcement, whether it's support of other police departments or actually troopers. And I think we have troopers assigned to around 38 posts around the state from, well, actually Prince Wells Island all the way up to Kotzebue. So certainly we have... again, a huge responsibility, and we also provide resource protection. Again, you know, and it'll probably come into the wildlife. I don't know that I want to jump into. I'll jump into that a little bit later. And we've talked about domestic violence. We do have the crime lab. We have one of the finest crime labs in the state. Our DNA submittals to the crime lab continue to grow because of our turnaround rate on DNA evidence from property crimes to homicides. Our sexual assault kit tracking program is working, and I hate to use backlog anymore because backlog is such a bad word with everything that's going on in state, but we're essentially keeping up with I'll call it the flow of sexual assault kits that are coming into our crime lab. If you've never been there, we would give you a tour because we're really proud of it, and we're proud of the individual disciplines that we have available that we don't have to ship out to the FBI crime lab. When I started as a trooper, every gun that I seized went to the FBI crime lab, and you might get it back from 6 months to a year, depending on the case. We can turn over that type of physical evidence much quicker.
Commissioner Cockrell, I had one question about the crime lab. This might be kind of a dumb question, so I apologize in advance, but I guess my question is, do you think having one crime lab in the state is adequate, especially like servicing our rural communities? I know it can be difficult. Somebody has to have their SART kit sent somewhere. They have to wait for it to go to Bethel, or go to Anchorage rather. So do you think that's adequate? And maybe if there's any opportunity to maybe have smaller crime labs or something like that. Again, that might be a dumb question. So do tell me if it was.
To the chair, Representative McCormick, I wouldn't say it's a dumb question. It's a reasonable question as big as our state, but the technology, the training, and the specialty skills it takes to do DNA, not like on TV where it turns around in a day. It can be several weeks before we get DNA evidence. I don't know that it would work. It would probably be really expensive, and we also, our crime labs accredited, which means a huge thing, especially when our technicians and lab techs are testifying in court. Having a accredited crime lab is so. I guess back to your original question, I don't know that it would be that prudent to do that. Essentially, as a department, I'd like to. always focus on the positive parts of the department. And I talked about it a little bit yesterday about how our momentum of the department has continued to go, and that's because of the support of the administration and the support of the legislature. And you know, I've said this many times, the legislature's been very kind to our department in funding our requests and our additional people, our additional civilian staff. But last year, you know, we're still recruiting. We have an academy going currently right now. We have 12 at the academy, but we've also got some laterals that come on, so we're hoping we'll graduate 20 Alaska State Troopers, which isn't bad. It's better than it has been. We graduated 20 last year, but we're still down about 60 positions right now. And like I say, we have last I heard 11 VPSOs currently, and then several municipal officers around the state that's in our academy right now. You know, we've been really focused on missing Indigenous persons. We've now put out a report that comes out every quarter to give us kind of a idea of where we're at. We've partnered with the Anchorage Police Department and the Fairbanks Police Department because those are the two bigger ones. We're hoping to expand that to other police departments where we have a really understanding of where we're at with missing and murdered Indigenous people. Like I say, we've had 4 investigators now assigned to those cold cases. We're currently working 6 cases right now ongoing in 4 regions of the state. Body-worn camera, I think that's something I've wanted for since I was colonel of the Alaska State Troopers. I actually brought mine today. I'll pass it around. Just if you do look at it, don't push any buttons because I don't know where it'll end up going. So, but something that, you know, I felt strongly as a colonel of the Alaska State Troopers, the technology really for the department wasn't there, and there wasn't really a focus from either the administration or the legislature at that time to fund it. We got funding from the legislature, also from the federal government, and we purchased like 600 of these. And right now, all our Alaska State Troopers, all our court service officers currently are wearing body-worn cameras. They should be. And we're trying to transition to the VPSO program. Part of the issues is connectivity in rural Alaska. One of the things I will say, we've now got Starlink in a lot of our posts, and it's been a huge game changer. I hate to say this, but probably the best thing that happened was when the cable got cut by the ice this year, because it forced us to look at something different. And Starlink has just been a game changer for our troopers and our VPSOs. And we've actually got 2 portable ones now that we can send on our CERT team or our SWAT team. When we do have incidents out in rural Alaska, we can set them up right there, and it allows them to communicate back and forth. So it's been a huge success. And we're right now got some snags with procurement, but we hope to continue to ensure that all our rural posts have Starlink, where we have broadband connectivity to the rest of the world. I would say our Bristol Bay program was very successful this year. We boarded over 400 commercial vessels. We issued 150 citations, and we see several hundred thousand pounds of salmon. One of the things that we did focus on this year was Area M, which is the area that potentially is intercepting lots of chum salmon that's going to the YK Delta region. We put an additional enforcement effort there because of all the issues that's currently going on. It certainly became political on the fishing game side, the Board of Fish side, and also the people that live on the YK Delta region. One of the things that we did, we deployed one of our large helicopters, saw the camera last year with our camera. We were able to sit offshore about 5 miles and videotape fishermen that were dumping salmon overboard, which is certainly against the management plan of the Department of Fish and Game. And I thought it was successful. We've made several cases. We've got some convictions already. What was impressive is at 4 to 5 miles with the video, I could actually tell that's a salmon versus a cod or any other fish. It was amazing seeing the video. And I applaud the wildlife troopers for coming up with something completely different. We've never had our A-Star helicopter down that far based out of that region. And it was fairly successful. It's unfortunate that we had people that were violating the intent and potentially intercepting salmon that were bound for the YK Delta, which we know that as you know, it's we're really struggling with salmon stocks there. Mm-hmm. And then we talked a little bit about the crime lab. One of the things that the crime lab has done is instituted a tracking system for our sexual assault kids. We call it an app. I'm not sure it's an app like on your phone. So if we do have a sexual assault, it gets registered, scanned, and then we can track it for when it's at the police department or the SART police department and when it gets to the crime lab and how it's getting processed through the crime lab. So that person can go look it up and I'll call it an app because that's what they call it and know exactly where that sexual assault kit is and when it's completely examined and they have the results. So it's a pretty cool thing. It's a best practice elsewhere around the state. Division of Alaska State Troopers, we've kind of talked a lot about that them today. Essentially, we've got the four detachments, and I don't know if you want me to go into it. D detachment is kind of central interior. B detachment is south central Alaska. That's where Matt Sue is, all the way down towards Valdez. A detachment is all of the Kenai Peninsula in southeast Alaska, and then C detachment is pretty much everything else. I'll call it a vibrant statewide drug unit. We task force for multiple agencies. The General Police Department is part of our HIDA. Several other police departments here on the southeast Alaska is involved in it. And our drug seizures continue to grow and set records every year for the past 3 years. Certainly heroin, cocaine's coming back, and then fentanyl. We're seizing a lot of fentanyl. Dispatch services, we have one dispatch center that we own, the Alaska State Troopers, and that's in Fairbanks. They dispatch and receive, I'll call it 911 calls from Western Alaska. So if we had a 911 call outside of one of your villages or one of your villages, it would go to Fairbanks. The problem we have is because they go on trunk lines, occasionally we will drop a call. And secondly, we don't have any data, so we don't know where that call's originating from. So if it's originating from Quinnahock, we wouldn't know that unless the person said we're at Quinnahock. So we're trying to, again, get next-gen dispatch, or I'll call it dispatch services, or 911 to rural Alaska. For we know if we have a village that calls and needs help, that we know exactly where that village is, or if that person calls his cell phone and he's broke down in a snow machine, we can locate it. Will our response times be reduced? I can't really say that because a lot of what we do in rural Alaska is so dependent on weather. We have asked for our capital budget. We have asked for a PC-12 or Pilatus because there are villages that, first of all, we have a King Air. I guess the issue here is, and something I dealt with last night, is we have serious crimes in our villages. We have a homicide right now that we're working that we can't get to because we don't have the ability of an aircraft. And we need to be able to respond. And the only way we can do that is with an aircraft that's available to go about any weather and get into a gravel strip. We did have a King Air, smaller King Air than our once, or whatever King Air we have, the bigger King Air, the smaller one, that the previous administration decided to sell it, but we specifically rigged that one up to land on gravel strips. And the newer King Air we can't, and we don't utilize on gravel strips because of potential damage it can do to our props. So we are looking at we're requesting this year a PC-12 for we can most likely put it in Fairbanks north of the Alaska Range where we can respond immediately and not try to find a charter or something like we're doing right now. We've got potential homicide, we've got a dead guy, and we're trying to get to it to do the investigation. Currently, we don't have an aircraft to get them there, and it's in the Waikiki Delta. We need to fix that. And this is the Pilatus has the ability to land at 97% of the strips in Alaska. So right now, a King Air is available for about 40%. So it's a huge difference. Search and rescue is something that we coordinate a lot with. I know the Northwest Arctic Borough has a vibrant search and rescue group, especially with snow machiners and boaters, and same with the Delta One of the things that we do provide support and also we respond to search and rescues. 2 years ago, we took a lot of the responsibility away from search and rescue from the Alaska State Troopers and moved them to the Alaska Wildlife Troopers for two reasons. One reason is to free up the Alaska State Troopers to respond to ongoing emergencies. Secondly, our wildlife troopers, they know the backwoods. They know how to drive a snow machine and ATV. Several of them are pilots, so we felt it'd be better for them to coordinate and actually participate in search and rescue versus the blue shirts or the Alaska State Troopers. Go ahead. So again, we talked about significant drug seizures investigations. We saw some significant cold cases recently. We've had some really cool DNA cases that we made. Was it last year? We found a skull up by Eagle. It had some teeth marks in it. Looked like a bear got it. We were able to get some familiar DNA, and it was a hunter that disappeared back in like 1980 or something. It looked like he was killed by a bear and was from New York. So we were able to track the family down, and it was pretty cool. We were able to tell the family, hey, we found the remains of your brother by now, and it's because the parents passed away. And we've done that with, we've even able to solve a couple Hansons in our serial killer cases and identify those remains. And we're currently in the process of doing some others. So we're doing some really cool work, some high level work on DNA and cold cases. We had a body that was found in Fairbanks not too long ago. We actually thought it was one of our missing Alaska Natives, but DNA, the guy was a student from, I don't know, Midwest somewhere. But so it's some pretty cool stuff that we're doing. And we talked about recruiting challenges. I will say that one of the issues that we have putting troopers in rural Alaska, and it continues, is housing. We talked about this last year multiple times. We have been working with our congressional delegation to try to get additional funding for housing. We do know that there's multiple federal housing that are laying empty. Bethel, we know we have a complex by the airport that FAA's had for many years that haven't had anybody there. We've been working on that. Even the governor was working on trying to get that housing. We do rent some FAA housing in King Salmon, and NOAA's given us a couple housing units in Nome. We do know that, you know, between all the federal agencies, there's a lot of vacant housing that can be utilized. We are working with Alaska Housing Finance to partner with the villages and with Alaska Housing Finance to find different avenues to get housing. I know there's villages out there that want a trooper or a VPSO. The problem is we just don't have the ability to do it. So.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks. So the federal government's pushing back on giving you FAA housing or leasing or renting FAA housing to the Alaska State Troopers?
Through the chair, it's been very challenging, and it's been sometimes well over a year before we can, if there's a house like the most recent one in Nome, it probably took us a year, maybe a little bit more, for them to finally turn the house over to us. So I don't know if pushback, I think it's their bureaucracy. I do know that the deputy commissioner's meeting with our delegation right now in D.C. on some other businesses, but that's going to be one of the talking points. Senator Murkowski did grant us $3 million for housing, and we're working through Alaska Housing Finance to try to do that. And we're not the only state agency. I mean, law has the same issues. And I will say in Nome, we did an RFP for housing units in Nome. They're currently... When last time I was in Nome a few months ago, they've got the foundation, or, you know, the not the foundation, but essentially they're working on it. I saw where there's actually wood going up. So that's a good, I think we're looking at 17 units there. I think some of them will go to law. Kotzebue, we almost lost the sevenplex there. And now I think we're in a 20-year lease agreement with them. So we're trying to buy additional housing in Dillingham, because we know there's a vacant house there and a house in Antioch. So we're looking, we're scouring the countryside looking for housing. And it's not only, because as I travel through the villages, it's not only for VPSOs or the troopers or teachers, even the rural residents are having housing issues. So it's certainly a statewide issue. It's not just limited to.
Thanks.
Yeah. We talked about a little bit about the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. You know, they have a unique job function to protect our wildlife resources. If you look at the fishery income that comes into the state, all the fisheries, the wildlife hunting and stuff, we're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry in itself. We got 90 troopers that police, I'll say, our backwoods and provide support. But they're not only providing wildlife support, they are Alaska State Troopers, and they do provide trooper support in our urban areas and our rural areas. Currently, we're utilizing them in their more off months, if you want to call it that, to do patrol work in the Mattsu Valley. They're doing patrol work on the Kenai Peninsula and in Fairbanks to augment what the Division of Alaska State Troopers are doing. One of the things that is up around the horizon is what climate change is going to do to our resources. And I know that especially our fishery resources, I think the demands on the division is going to continue to increase based on our conversations with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. If you look at our caribou stocks up in your region and our doll sheep, a lot of that is decline of doll sheep, and our state is can be attributed to climate change and the habitats that they roam in or climb in. So certainly we've seen major fluctuations in fish stocks, crab stocks, and I think we'll continue to see more emphasis on enforcement in certain areas of the state when it comes to your wildlife, your fish and game resources.
I would like to note for the record, we were joined by Representative Hinshute at 8:49. We are also joined by Representative Gray. Welcome, Rep. Gray.
So we talked a little bit about the area M fisheries, so I don't think I need to go back to that. One of the other things the wildlife troopers do, even though it's not in our department, it's in the Department of National Resources, we pretty much provide boating safety around the state. The state parks, who actually has the boating safety program, they're focused specifically in the park units like Kenai River, Big Lake. So it's the Alaska Wildlife Troopers are actually, say, on the Waikele to Waikei Delta or other areas, providing boating safety education, especially in the off months. And also, they usually investigate boating safety fatalities. Challenges, if you look at Alaska, we have 600, almost 7,000 miles of coastline that interact with communities, and important staple of a lot of our coastal communities is their fishing game resources. So it's, again, having reasonable fishing game enforcement is important to the state. So if when I came on the part, and well, in 1983, I came on the part where there was 121 wildlife troopers. We're down to 90. And we have the same amount of Alaska State Trooper authorized positions as we did when I came on in 1983. That's 40 years ago, almost 40 years. Shows you my age, too. So, go ahead. So, again, everybody's been focused on vacancies. I don't know if this committee wants to go into it or not, but we can certainly have a discussion on it. I think currently as a department, we have a vacancy factor of about 17%. That includes all job classes. Like I spoke earlier, we have about 62, and that will change, fluctuate in the division of the wildlife, our troopers. That includes wildlife troopers. Doesn't include the troopers that we have at the academy right now. We won't count those till they actually come out of the academy. So we're hopefully, I'd like to get us down to a reasonable vacancy rate on the troopers and also continue to grow it. When the governor and I first started discussing trooper positions, my goal was to get us up to over 400 authorized trooper positions, knowing that we were going to have some vacancies because the government can't function if we don't have vacancies because we're never fully funded for those, have them all full. But we need, as a department, we need to continue to grow both our wildlife troopers and our Alaska State Troopers. Aircraft Marine, we have a pretty vibrant aircraft section. And we, like, our biggest aircraft is the King Air. We have several Super Cubs, and we're up to 3 Caravans. One is in station in Bethel, one is in Fairbanks, and one is in Anchorage. We with funding we received 2 years ago from the support of the administration and the legislature, we did work on modernizing our aircraft fleet, so we did purchase additional aircraft, including 2 Robertson helicopters, actually 3 that were put, one in Bethel, one is a fill-in for the Matsu Valley, and then one is for Juneau. So this will be the first time we'll have a rotor wing aircraft in Bethel. We have 19 posts that we currently have aircraft in right now. We flew about 6,400 hours in calendar year 23, which is a 12% increase. I will say our aircraft section continues to, again, continues to grow just because of the limited amount of ability to lease aircraft or grab an aircraft very quickly. I mean, it's hard for us to respond to a felony level crime and try to find seat fare from Bethel to Quinnahock or one of the other villages. So we rely heavily on aircraft. Part of our remodification, we did purchase a couple 206s. One went to Kodiak, one went to Dillingham. We finally got the Dillingham pilot position filled. We've actually got a pilot and an airplane there finally, and that's taken us almost 2 years to do. But it's another region of the state we didn't really have any aircraft availability, and so we're pretty excited about that. We just hired the pilot here a couple weeks ago.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks. So the PC-12, is that to replace the King Air? Are you going to sell the King Air, or are you going to, is the PC-12 desire in addition to the King Air?
Through the chair, the PC-12 and King Air are 2 different missions, so no, we're not planning on selling the King Air.
Okay. And so,
follow up.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry. The why if you have a King Air full IFR and you have caravans that can get into every strip in Alaska, just about, why do we need a PC-12? I mean, PC-12 is faster. It's about $200 an hour more to operate than a caravan, but it's kind of, it's a difference between a pickup truck and a limo, essentially. So what's the, and you know me, you've heard me say this before, airplanes are a fabulous way to waste money, and that's coming from a pilot. So I'm just curious what the thought process is and why PC-12.
Okay, through the chair. And I'll have to disagree with you a little bit about aircraft for a waste of money. They are our backbone of our department. We could not do our job with aircraft. There is a huge difference between, and you know more than I do, because I'm a pilot, but it's been a while since I've flown. There's a big difference between a caravan and a PC-12 when it comes to flying bad weather across the Alaska Range to get to a village that we just had a homicide that we need to investigate, get it taken care of, and get the body out of there to the ME's office. I am so tired of getting called in the middle of the night because we can't get to a village that we've had a serious crime, or we've got some guy running around with a gun and I can't get to cert team in it. The caravan's not going to do it most times. The Platus will. The King Air is designed for a completely different mission, and we do not take the King Air on gravel strips, nor will we. It's worth too much money, and we use it for other reasons. So I guess that's my answer.
Reasonable waste was, follow-up?
Follow-up.
Reasonable explanation. Waste was probably the wrong word. Maybe spend would be a better word. But I get that. I get the different missions. PC-12 prop is within inches of the gravel that a King Air is. A lot of it has to do with how much IFR are you flying? Does the village have an approach? I mean, if the village doesn't have an instrument approach, then the PC-12 is going to be just as worthless as the King Air. You're almost going to have to take a caravan and do it VFR. So lots of considerations, and I'm sure your aircraft, your chief pilot is talking about those. I just don't want to see us buy a really expensive airplane just because it's a really expensive airplane and it's kind of nice to have. So,
through the chair, I understand where you come from, your concern. This is something the department has, wanted it for a long time because we see the useful needs of it. We regardless, we're an aircraft state. Since COVID, it's hard for us to lease airplanes. Right now, we had a huge drug bust in Dillingham. You probably all read about it. We leased a PC-12 from Illiamna Air. Some of our PC-12 leases are rent for the day. Charters, I guess is a better word, can be up to $30,000. But we're still on the schedule of that operator. They're not on our schedule. And we have to have the ability to take a CERT team, well, I'll call it a SWAT team, so that's what most people, and get into a village when we have an active event. We have multiple active events in our smaller communities out west, and we have to be able to respond to take care of the issue one way or another. I look at the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They have 24 in their service right now, PC-12s. I know the Texas Public Safety has at least two. And if you look around the states, it's not uncommon to see PC-12s in law enforcement. We also provide support for the administration when, like, we had the huge storms that hit the regions. We provided support for the governor because he and his staff needed to assess it. So we had to beg, steal, and borrow to get our planes up there and to get him where he needed to go. Because the King Airs, we're just not going to take the King Air and some of the airstrips. And we have to, as we look at national disasters, we have to be able to respond immediately. We can't rely on Illiamna Air at some point in time, which has been, I'm mumbling right now, but I think it's critical. And again, if you took the phone calls I take at the middle of the night or our colonels take to try to get a person or get a team to our villages, I think you'd think twice.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Commissioner Cockle, for being here through the chair. And thank you for telling us what you need and how we can support you in doing the job that needs to be done across a really vast state, including in the rural parts of the state. My question has to do with the pilots, and I might have asked this question before, and I just can't recall. When you hire a pilot, is that person strictly a pilot, or are all of your pilots law enforcement, what do you call that, commissioned?
To the chair, essentially we have both. We have trooper pilots. I was a trooper pilot for 6 or 7 years. So it's a combination. Most of the wildlife troopers that are pilots. For our bigger aircraft, we now rely on professional pilots. There's several reasons for that. So it's a combination. Our Robertson helicopters, we have trooper pilots on either one of the divisions. And then our smaller aircraft we do, but our larger aircraft we focus specifically on professional pilots because that's their job. We found when we lost Hilo 1, one of the findings that NTSB came was having trooper pilots that have a mission to go and overrides the safety factor essentially, and they should be focused on the event that they're going to and not worry about the weather, the approach, and all these other things you do as a pilot. So you're double tasking your trooper, and we're trying to get away from that. So primarily our smaller aircraft, we do have troopers, and it just depends on on where it's at, but most of those are wildlife troopers.
Thank you.
Please continue.
All right. So I think we're on marine. Essentially, we talked about climate change. I think we're going to see huge changes in not only search and rescues because of the ice, sea ice, and also the ice is in the river. And I will say again, I don't know if I want to bring this up or not, but we are asking for a new patrol vessel for Southeast Alaska. The one that we have is out non-commissioned and is up for sale, and we're looking at anywhere from 85 to 100 foot class vessel to patrol Southeast Alaska, and hopefully, you know, we'll get through that process this year. It's important to Southeast Alaska. We've responded to, unfortunately, some pretty bad landslides and you know, vessel crashes up on the beaches and stuff like that. So we have, as a law enforcement agency, we have to, again, we have to police the waters, protect the folks that are out on the waters. One of the, you know, the models that we, this was several years ago when we got to Chimay, but one of the things that we try to do with our, like in Southeastern Kodiak, is set our vessels up as floating offices. So they can go into Petersburg, they can do whatever they need, do the investigations, and they just kind of go around. And not only to enhance, you know, public service and I'll call it community policing, but it also allows the people there to know that, you know, the troopers are out patrolling. And we're not only just looking for fishing game violations. We've taken border protection out. We've done drug seizures with our vessels. I mean, so we do search and rescues, fish and game enforcement. We also do criminal enforcement with it, and we hook people up and take them to the closest jail if we need to do that. BPSO program, I don't know if we need to so much talk about that. We've talked about that. And again, I'm very proud of where we're at with the BPSO program. We've got a great new director. Jim Hosher came over from, who was a BPSO, was a police officer and chief in Hooper Bay, was from the Waikea Delta, and we're really, really pleased so far with where he wants to go with the program. We certainly interface almost every day because we want the program to continue to be vibrant and continue to grow at the rate that we're seeing it grow. They have the same central issues that the troopers do. I will say I think they're doing better in recruitment and retention than we are for the troopers, and having significant infrastructure again, housing is important to them. And one of the things we did do is we did attach, and because we got funding a couple of years ago, tribal liaison to the BPSO program. We've also got a tribal liaison now assigned to the Division of Alaska State Troopers because we are interfaced with the tribe so much. I think over the last few years, our credibility has increased in a lot of the regions of the state because of the direction the department's going. I'm really, again, really pleased at the staff that I have, the troopers and the BPSOs, and the support staff that we have around our department. It's come leaps and bounds, I think, in the last 3 or 4 years. Certainly nothing I've done. It's just we've had really good people.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks. So I love the VPSOs, as you can probably tell, and pilots. But could we get a list? I think a couple of years ago, maybe you gave us a list of the villages that had VPSOs, the villages that had two VPSOs, as well as the villages that wanted a VPSO or could support a VPSO. It seems to me that you passed that out to the committee 2 years ago, probably. So it'd be really great to see that. I'd also like to mention, just so you know, and so this committee knows, there is a definition of village in our statutes, and it's a community of less than 2,500. It says nothing about the road system, says nothing about whether or not it's accessible. It says a community less than 2,500 people, and I happen to have a lot of those. Willow is less than 2,500 people, Talkeetna, Trapper Creek, so you can see the direction I'm going. I would love to expand the VPSO program, and I think you're on the same page. But It's just something that we need to think about. So I'd love to have that list if you don't mind.
To the chair, we can provide that information.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, through the chair. Commissioner, I see you have grantees. That's how this program works. Is state money awarded to, when you say grantees, so this is state funding that goes through you, through your department to tribes?
Through the chair, through the 10 grantees, it is state funding. We fund the grantees to run the BPSO program.
Follow up, Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, through the chair. Has there been any issue with timely payment of those grant awards from the state? I just want to make sure that we're doing business as well as we can do it as a state. Do you have any information on whether we're a good partner?
Through the chair, I would expect we're a good partner. To my knowledge, we haven't had any complaints. I will say when you talk to they have coordinator meetings this week in Anchorage. If you talk to the coordinators and stuff, they feel the support the department and the Alaska State Troopers are given the VPSOs has increased. And everything I've heard has been very positive. And we have a really good VPSO office in Anchorage. It's only staffed by a couple, but they do a really good job. They're really dedicated to the division now instead of the program. I will say this, something I hadn't touched on, is we also are looking at a regional public safety officer. There's a statute that was actually used to hire regional public safety officers that weren't troopers, but that were focused on kind of like constables in some of our smaller communities. We now have that program was good in its conception. However, we just couldn't get people to take it. So the regional public safety officers that we had ended up becoming Alaska Street Troopers. But we're looking at, there's some intent language in our budget last year that the Senate put in. We're looking at having an elevated VPSO. That way he or she can roam around their region and be kind of like a supervisor for the VPSOs in the village and provide training and support. And also it gives them the ability to advance up into a higher level. And so we're kind of excited. We're going to start implementing that here fairly soon. It's been a while. We want to make sure that we had all our policies and any other questions. But it is certainly a step forward for the program. I know that there's discussions between the grantees about some of them want their VPSOs armed. I think Northwest Arctic Borough, we talked to them last week about arming. And certainly by law, they can arm. And the department, not going to go either way. That's a decision that the tribe has to make. And it's also a decision that the grantee has to make. But I know that that's coming around the corner again. It was Bryce Edmonds' bill. It's probably 10 or 12 years ago. I was there when he signed it under Parnell. But it really hasn't gained foot because there's, I think, the liability and insurance has been the thing that's been holding them back. But I do foresee the regional public safety officer positions potentially being armed at some point in time, and then they'll just roam around their region.
Follow-up, Representative Hemshute.
Through the chair, just a quick comment. I support what Vice Chair McCabe is asking for to get a list. It would be really helpful. Thank you.
Before proceeding, I just want to point out and say that I appreciate that under challenges, this insufficient rural public safety infrastructure. During a visit to Tuxuk Bay, they showed me their facility, which they use, but it's just woefully inadequate and frankly not safe. But, sometimes, I guess, in rural Alaska, frankly, being in a safe building is a luxury. So we make do with what we have. But I just say that to put that out there, that there's a lot of needs in our communities, and I appreciate that that's in your slide. So thank you.
The chair, Representative McCormick. One other thing, Neposkiak just built a public safety building in Neposkiak, and I see that, and some of that was with our funding and some of it was AVCP's funding. I foresee those partnerships to continue. I know the up in Nome, Warwick has provided public safety housing in some of their areas. And so I know it's slow, but we are, as a team, trying to ratify that. I do know that our jails in rural Alaska is totally inadequate. It's something that you see on a cowboy show. You know, we had a fire and a fatality recently in one of our jails out in there, and that's not the first time that's happened, and that's something that at some point it's going to have to get addressed, whether it's the federal government does it or wherever the funding comes from. But we have to have adequate holding facilities that's safe and doesn't catch on fire. The Division of Fire Life Safety, I've got, like I say, the deputy or the fire marshal, you know, they do a lot of work doing it, safety inspections, plan reviews, and I will say they've upped their game and certainly have increased or decreased the amount of time it takes to get a building plan reviews. One of the things focused when I took this job is, you know, we 2000, we lost a couple of deputy fire marshals to budget cuts. I wanted to grow the fire marshal, deputy fire marshals, and place them in areas of the state that we traditionally didn't have them. And Bethel was one, and then one in Southeast, and then we ended up with one in Fairbanks. The challenges we're having there is, and we still have the vacancies where we want to place them in rural Alaska. And because if you look at the schools that catch fire, we just had the event in Norvik, Selawik before that. Whether that would have prevented them or not, I can't say. But if we had a presence that were with a deputy fire marshal that was engaged with the communities and stuff, and they would invite them into their homes and stuff where they could do inspections, whether the fire or smoke alarms work or provide other ideas where their stoves are, for we don't have these tragic fires. It takes out a school. Think of the millions of dollars it costs to rebuild that school. And in the long run, it's cheap insurance when you think about it. It's just the problem we're having with it is we can't, because it's such a specialty position, because they do arson investigations, and they also support the Division of Alaska State Troopers. It's hard to find somebody that, first of all, wants to move to rural Alaska, but secondly, just to take on those responsibilities. So we still have, I think, three open positions that we want to put in rural areas, and if not, I'm have to figure out another way to get them up there. But this, again, it was kind of a priority of mine. The governor put them in the budget, and I feel bad because we can't fill it. And whether it make a difference or not, I don't know that. But if we don't try, if we do nothing, the same, we're going to get the same results.
I apologize, Representative Ruffridge. I neglected to mention that you joined us at 9:07 a.m. Yeah, welcome.
I think we pretty much have touched pretty much all this. Yeah. So victim services, we talked about that. That's my next goal, is to put all our victim services into one division to have better communications and better coordination with our services, because a lot of them share the same federal funding. And again, it wasn't my idea. It was my staff's idea. It says we need to do something better when it comes to dealing with our victims and providing services. And so that's that would, and we talk, again, I talked about it. It's Council of Domestic Violence, Violent Crimes Conservation Board, Victim Navigator. I will say, you know, we've got five victim navigators now in the state that follow up on felony level crimes, instead of having the troopers, them trying to get a hold of the troopers. You know, we've got ensure that we're staying in touch with our victims. It's important, especially in certain areas of the state where our victims will move around a lot, and then we end up losing the potential of holding that offender accountable. And it's been very successful. I didn't put down how many contacts we had, several hundred that we've had interactions with with victims of serious crimes, and it's a good thing. It really is, because what happens is if you're a last state trooper, you investigate a felony level crime. Once you start the process, you could get three more felony level crimes in 1 week. And the next thing you know, those people get pushed off to the side. And again, we have all these protections for our criminals, but we don't have our protections for our victims. And this is to keep them in the game, keep them engaged, to keep them informed. And I'm really excited where it's going. We have asked, I think, for two more. We've got one that's actually in Bethel, and we can't fill the one in Nome, so we're filling it in Anchorage, and we'll have to do a telephonic. But we are working in that direction. It also includes our missing person clearinghouse for missing and murdered Indigenous people.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks. Can we back up one slide to the Division of Statewide Services Information Systems? I was kind of waiting until we got here to ask this question. So
okay. I got the right person to answer it if I can.
Yeah, no worries. So we are looking for information from your website, and inside that site you have a beautiful presentation of how many troopers, like in the Mat-Su per capita, for everywhere in the state except Fairbanks. And we've been struggling to get that information for about 2 days or 3 days. And I'm hopeful that we can maybe update that website or get the information. I'd like to see the same information spread across the whole state. How many troopers in Anchorage per capita? You know, how many troopers in the Mat-Su, Southeast? And Fairbanks just seems to be its own little sort of microcosm up there. And it'd be really great to get that breakdown.
Through the chair, I was advised a couple days ago that our website was off a little bit. We'll work on that and get it.
Thanks. Yeah,
you're welcome. I don't think there was any ill.
Oh, no, sure. I'm sure there was. Through the chair, IT seems to, you know, when you are so focused on a mission and you're so stretched thin, IT seems to suffer a little bit. That's totally understandable.
I think we, unless you have questions on this slide, I'll go to the next one, and that's it. I will say the paralegal, through the chair, I'm sorry, McCormick, the paralegal that we wanted for Nome, Kosovo, we combined them, and actually we filled it in Anchorage for our victim navigator. And hopefully at some point in time, we'll be actually, I always want them in the places where it occurs. So hopefully at some point we'll be able to move them up there. But we're, if I can have, I know that you guys, I don't know what time it is, but I just want to thank you for your attention, your questions. I think it's very important as a law enforcement agency that you know what we're doing as a law enforcement agency. I do know with the support the legislature and the administration has given us over the 3 years, we've grown. We're going in the right direction. We've hit a snag with our hiring troopers. I know the goal of the governor is to continue to, he said it in the state of state. There's so many good things could happen if I had all my positions filled. There's so many good things, not only the health and safety of my staff, my troopers, but also to the citizens. You know, they would get, because we're burning them out right now, and they would get more time off, not as much overtime. There's so many good things. And one thing I should have focused on is our wellness program, which started in 2020. Again, that's very vibrant. We've certainly have gained or grown as a department in the exception of wellness and talking about critical incidents. We've got peer support. We've got critical incident response teams when we do have a bad thing happen. And we've actually sent people out to places to help them out that are struggling with the stresses of the job and the trauma that they see. I mean, it's hard to explain some of the stuff that our troopers are seeing, and sometimes it's almost on a daily occasion. And there has to be an outlook or outlier to protect them as they continue to go through their career. If not, we're going to lose them, and they're going to be jaded. I am concerned with our staff shortages, because as we continue to have our troopers work lots of overtime and continue to deal with what they're doing, they get tired and they make mistakes or say things they shouldn't. And just because of the stressors of the job, something that we have to be aware of. We're in the process of making a job offer for a mental health professional in our wellness program. Hopefully that'll happen fairly quickly. And I can provide information if you want on the program. But as a department, I'm really confident of where we're going, and we'll continue to focus on the areas that we believe will provide higher level public safety for our citizens, no matter where they live or where, no matter what their zip code is. I mean, it's important to us. Our troopers care about what they do. They care about the people they interact with, the victims. Sometimes it doesn't look that, just because of the totality of the circumstances, but they really do. When you go to Bethel and you go to Nome and COTS and you talk to those troopers, I stopped, talked to two troopers on the way to the airport when I came in yesterday, and they were going to Nome. And, they love their job, and it's not really a job, it's a career, but they love what they're doing because they're making a difference. We all kind of, when we took our interviews, go through the process, I think probably all of us said we want to do something meaningful. We want to have a purpose in life. We want to do good, and know your troopers are out there doing that. And we do make mistakes, and we'll own up to the mistakes that we do make. I think that's important for a law enforcement agency. It's important that you all know what we're doing and the direction we're going. And I appreciate your time very much.
Thank you very much for your presentation this morning, Commissioner Cockrell. I apologize. I'm the worst at this. I never ask questions on the right slide, so you might indulge me for just a moment. I have one more question for you. I think you kind of talked about it a little bit, hit some of the notes I was hoping you would, but if you talk a bit about just the lack of 911 services again, maybe just what we can do as a body to improve that situation and maybe help us identify maybe things that need funding, that sort of thing.
Well, through the chair, 911 is some of it's over my head because of all the technology it takes. The bottom line is the state has to invest in 911 in rural Alaska. And it's because I've seen some of the projected numbers, and it's not cheap because we have to start pretty much from scratch, because right now we're just using trunk lines that get routed. It looks like an airways is how it all gets routed to our dispatch center in Fairbanks. And a lot of times we have dropped calls. We had one, was it last year, year before, last winter, where we dropped one lady called 911. It did hit Fairbanks, didn't know where the call originated from, but knew there was something going on. She ended up getting murdered. Would we got there in time? No, but at least we would have had a option of contacting a tribal elder, public health nurse, or whomever, and maybe the VPSO. There wasn't a VPSO in that building. But realistically, it gives us more options when we know exactly where that call is being originated. Right now, we don't have that. There is technology to do that. We are working with a vendor to try to make that happen. But again, the overall costs are fairly high, and I'm not sure where we're going as an administration right now. I know that the governor supports the administration. I think that's a better word for it. I know the administration is supportive of it. It's just a matter of how to make it work and what the costs are. And I think that's what we're working through right now. But it is a priority of this department. I didn't necessarily think it should come in Department of Public Safety, but there's not another department that really, I don't think, wanted it. And I thought it was our responsibility to take that issue up.
Thank you, Commissioner Cockrell. Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks. So one more thing, and I appreciate you patrolling in the Matsu. I just want to know if you stopped anybody and what his reaction was when the state trooper, the head of the state trooper, stopped him and said.
Well, it was an interesting night. If you want to get into it a little bit, we had four arrests. Actually got to wrestle with somebody almost, and chased a guy down, like I say, through knee-deep snow for about an hour and a half, and the sergeant and I, and well, they ended up, we ended up Wasilla got, did a drug search on a drug house. They thought it was kind of neat because I actually took my gun out of my holster during the search of the house, which has been a long time since I've cleared a house. We had a fight in progress with multiple assailants, with a woman getting drug into a into the house. We responded to that. We made an arrest there and took some dope. Certainly every incident we had was either alcohol or drug related. We had a situation, and we had a death investigation, and we had a situation where a family member, Narcan, had their son, which is an adult son, was going in cardiac arrest because of fentanyl. They Narcan him. He came to. I will say the sergeant on scene spent 20 minutes talking him into handcuffs because he also had warrants out for his arrest, and we took him peacefully. And a lot of that was just the patience of the sergeant. We had four of us there getting ready to take this guy down and try to get him cuffed, and he was actually naked at the time. But the bottom line is the sergeant was patient, talked him through it. We got him in handcuffs and got him to jail. So it was an eventful 8 hours. It was well worth it. And sure enough, corrections was there because we did the search of the house. They all knew the commissioner. Everybody knew the commissioner was in the valley that day. It was a neat experience. I'm glad I did it. Really am.
Cool. So. Thanks. No, I just wanted to say I appreciate that, and truthfully, I appreciate that kind of leadership that you're out there and experiencing what your troops are. It's a breath of fresh air, frankly. So thanks.
Thank you.
Any more comments or questions for Commissioner Cockrell before we conclude this morning? Hearing none. Commissioner Cockrell, it's always a privilege to have you speak before us again. I can't express enough, to use a phrase that my vice chair just used, it's a breath of fresh air to hear you speak about the struggles that we face in rural Alaska. You know, I just in my own experience have always felt like we're kind of an afterthought. And I hear voices of my constituents all the time in my head. Why is the bush always last? Why is the bush always last? And your acknowledgement of the lack of services in our communities really is a breath of fresh air. But I also acknowledge that there's still so much work to do. And it's one thing to say that the problem's there. It's another thing to actually make a change. And so looking forward to continuing working with you. And again, I just really want to thank you for comments you've made today. And of course, comments last night in Tribal Affairs. And I didn't get to say it on the record last night, but I'll say it now. I get so tired of hearing politicians say, oh, we'll fight for this, we'll fight for that. But I'll tell you what, if anybody tries to take your job for what you did and what you said last night, I will fight them. So, Commissioner Cockrell, thank you very much for your presentation. That's all we have today for House Community and Regional Affairs. We'll be meeting Thursday. However, I will be handing the gavel over to our finance members who will be beginning finance subcommittees. And that, of course, will be here at 8 a.m., room 124. As there's no further business to come before us, the committee this morning, we will adjourn at 9:30 a.m.